fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Two Iraqi cities that our bravest young men and women gave their lives, limbs, and innocence to liberate have fallen to the very enemy we pushed out. And the Secretary of State for the administration that assured us this threat had ended now proclaims, "You have our support, but you're on your own." Just like the rest of the Middle East. All that precious American blood wasted like the sand it gushed into by this nation's greatest enemies who, like Lincoln warned us, come from within. Hey, if that doesn't cheer you up, we will. The American Adversaries, Bodacious Sunday Night Shindig on News Talk 660. Lair Adams here to introduce you to our host, who will introduce you to who knows what, Christopher Hart.
All right. Thanks so very much, Lair Adams. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us once again for our Sunday evening three-hour tour on a beautiful Sunday afternoon here in Central Florida, January, New Year. Enjoy this little bit of warm weather because it's going to get real chilly about this time tomorrow night. And be ready, folks, for the chill tomorrow night as it really dips down below freezing here in Central Florida. But as Lair said, we're going to keep you warm tonight, and we've got a full 3 hours to do it then, and I hope you'll stay with us the whole 3 hours. And don't forget, though, Mark Walters will join you at 8 o'clock with Armed American Radio, and he always has a lot to talk about.
Talk about shooting.
Especially with this administration. And we got a lot to talk about. We are going to talk about the situation in Iraq and the situation in the Middle East overall, because it appears as though the rest of the world is, let's just say it this way, the pajama boy image has not been lost on the rest of the world, and they are taking advantage of it, and more so every day. Of course, Nostra Dennis is here to predict the past. Carl, by the way, that is Nostra Dennis in the studio here.
Well, I'm trying not to make Carl Jackson a liar, because he said on the show yesterday morning, those American adversaries, they're tearing it up on Sunday nights. There I go.
And he'll be tearing it up with predicting the past here shortly. We have Johnny Guns in the studio. Johnny?
Keeping Carl's seat warm tonight.
There you go. And, of course, he's going to be doing some WTF news for us later on. And Jeff Sinis is on the bridge tonight, so we are in good hands. There you go. As I said, we'll be talking about the Middle East. We'll be talking also about the new era of progressivism, as was announced by Bill de Blasio the other day during his inauguration ceremony. And I want to talk about that because it's such in your face, for one, the way they went about it. But two, it is, be prepared, because this is the Democrat storyline going forward here as Barack Obama tries to reclaim the mantle, if you will, of leadership. And that is that you need liberals to take care of the inequalities in life. So we'll talk a good deal about that in the next hour. Sonny, our California Glow Girl, is going to join us, and we're going to talk about Jahi McMath. You guys know who Jahi McMath is?
Yes.
The little girl that has been declared dead, and her parents want to keep her on life support. We'll talk about that with her. We'll also talk about the rollout of actual coverage of Obamacare in California, because we have been hearing some things in the media saying, oh, there are states like New York and California where everything's going just fine. Well, if you talk to people from California, you might get an actual different response on that.
Haven't we heard this, Chris, from people in Canada? Oh, the people in Canada love their health care. Then you talk to people that just can't stand it.
Same with England. They love it as long as they can come across the border to America to actually get good quality health care. They love it that much, all right. But before we go anywhere, first, I want to say I believe wholeheartedly that the football gods have spoken. They have heard the nonsense about the game of football, and they have provided us with one of the most exciting seasons in football that I can remember, both college and pro games. You have to look no further than Johnny Gunn's very own Indianapolis Colts last night. If they didn't have bad luck, they would have had no luck at all.
Fortunately, they had luck. They had Andrew Luck.
And he pulled it out, the second greatest comeback in an NFL.
In postseason history, yeah.
And I remember that Bills game because I thought they were out of it. I mean,
they were down 31-3, weren't they, early in
I believe they were down by 31 points.
34-3.
Yeah, 34-3. That's right. Yeah. And it was a whale of a comeback. And it was by a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Of course,
Frank Reich.
In this case, it was by the starting quarterback.
Andrew Luck.
Yeah, who admitted later on that he felt like he was the cause of them being so far down.
He threw a pick. He felt bad. Wow.
In a way, three interceptions by Andrew Luck. So, yeah, he helped contribute to that deficit.
But it really was an exciting game last night. A lot of the bowl games have been exciting. Houston and Vanderbilt looked like it was going to be a blowout.
Really?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And Vanderbilt was
let's not mention UCF.
Well, I mean, that was an exciting game.
That was exciting to the last 4 or 5 minutes.
Absolutely. So, the football gods have spoken up and said all this nonsense about getting rid of the game or doing something to fundamentally alter the game. No, mm-mm. I don't think so.
And don't take anything away from Philly, New Orleans last night.
Well, that's true, too.
Last-second field goal.
Time expiring.
Yeah,
that's right.
The only boring game so far has been the one that just happened, San Diego and Cincinnati.
Yeah, San Diego
so
upsetting
Colts
Cincinnati.
Colts and Bolts in the AFC, huh?
Yeah, it looks like it. So, once again, looks like it's going to be, an exciting finish to an exciting season, and I believe the football gods have spoken up. So, let's go now to something a little more serious, and that's what Lair started us off with tonight, and that is the fact that Fallujah, where the fiercest and nastiest fighting of the Iraq War did occur, as our Marines went in there to try to eliminate the militants and the Al-Qaeda elements, and were basically held back by the politicians in their first attempt. I don't know if you guys know what happened in the first Marine invasion, if you will, of Fallujah, but basically they had to go house to house and root them out like rats, and literally. And they had chased them all into a very small portion of the city. And basically they had them surrounded, and they were on the verge of going in there and eliminating the rats. Until the Iraqi leadership called the American leadership and said, "We don't want that to happen." And so the Marines were ordered to stand aside while the militants escaped out the back door.
We heard a lot of the same thing from Duncan Hunter's son, Duncan Jr., who called his dad back in the States in the middle of a firefight to say, "They're telling us to pull back. What the heck is going on here?"
And so what the Marines had to do was then later on again basically invade Fallujah and do the job all over again, except this time they were allowed to finish the job. And that was part of the surge and all that stuff. And it really did lead to the turning point in the war, for much for the better. And I really kind of want to go back to the start of this, a starting point. The New York Times did a front page article today. What's the title of it again, Johnny? I think you have it there.
Yeah, I was reading it. Power Vacuum in Middle East Lifts Militants.
Lifts militants. In other words, lifts their stature, lifts their prominence, lifts their place. And we've talked about this over and over and over again. We talked about this when Barack Obama didn't sign the Security of Forces Agreement, the so-called SOFA agreement with the Iraqis to leave a residual force behind, which Colonel McKnight has said repeatedly on the show is a huge mistake. That in any vacuum, The nature does not tolerate a vacuum. Vacuums do not exist in nature. Let's just put it that way. If one element pulls out, another element goes in. And in the case of international politics, when the good guys leave, the bad guys go in. And that's exactly what is going on here. And that's basically what the article about is about in the New York Times. They mentioned Fallujah and Ramadi. They mentioned violence in Lebanon. They mentioned the spillover of violence, I believe, from Syria. And talk about how there is no, what was the quote, Johnny? No will, no political will to do anything about it. He'll find the quote here real quickly. And the problem is... For the president, it was an easy political decision to say, let's get out of Iraq. I mean, that was his campaign promise, one of the few he's actually kept. And the same with Afghanistan, which, by the way, they do have an agreement, but it has not yet been signed by the Afghani president. And our president is putting no pressure on the Afghani president to solidify the deal. Now, presumably, if there is an election in Afghanistan, which there's supposed to be this year, that the new president will sign the deal because their Congress and their tribal leaders have all approved the deal. And it isn't a very good deal for our forces, by the way, but at least it keeps a residual force there.
What's the holdup then? If the Afghani leaders are in favor of the deal?
Karzai is the holdup. And the lack of a president with gonads over here. We have a pajama boy president. You must understand this. This is the way that pajama boy image for selling Obamacare is what the world sees of our president. He's soft. He wants to sit on a couch wearing pajamas, drinking hot chocolate, talking with the women. You know, and I'm not saying this to talk down to women. I'm saying this is the way they see him. You understand? Because they see him surrounded by Valerie Jarrett and Michelle Obama, always in them big old ears of his. They do not see that as being a strong president. They see that image as being very weak. And they are only too happy to take advantage of it when it plays out in reality. For instance, when we leave no security forces in Iraq. And what that ultimately means, not if we didn't have any interest in the Middle East, who would give a hoot, right? But we still have interest in the Middle East.
We know France isn't going to go in. We know England isn't going to go in.
All right, well, the break just snuck up on me, and rather have Jeff extend it, we'll go ahead and take the break and get right back into this when we come back. You are listening to the American Adversaries. Drive time on our 3-hour tour.
The California girl. And I've been around a lot of big, hunky, sexy, tough men. I like men like that, but only when they're brainy, like the American Adversaries. On News Talk 660 WORL, these guys are sexy and smart.
What a combination, huh?
Wish I could talk to Sonny. Oh, we're going to get to talk to Sonny soon.
Yeah, that'll be right.
Pretty
be
soon.
7 o'clock. Okay, welcome back, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries on our Sunday night 3-hour tour. And Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and myself will be with you until then. And Mark Walters will take over then. Carl will be back next week. Hopefully he's got the flu. He was coming down with it yesterday, and it has hit
Carl?
Him hard.
Carl. Ooh, sorry, buddy.
Yeah, he's using the Roxy, but it's on him. But anyway, we were talking about the power vacuum that the New York Times wrote about today, and Johnny found the quote. I want him to read real quickly, please.
Yeah, but for all its echoes, the bloodshed that has engulfed Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria in the past 2 weeks exposes something new and destabilizing. The emergence of a post-American Middle East in which no broker has the power or the will to contain the region's sectarian hatreds.
Because the Americans won't do it, nobody else will, is what they are saying. And why should this matter to us? Well, first of all, Laird talked about it in his opening remarks. We have brave, precious American blood laying in that sand over there and in those streets of that town. Yep. And think of the atrocities. And think of it this way, too. And I must say that I pin part of the blame here on President George W. Bush and part of the blame on President Obama, because neither one has come to the American public and been direct and honest to them about what we are in. Now, we've talked about it on this show, and we've had authors and others talk about it on this show, but whether our administrations, and I do say that in a plural, want to admit it or not, we are in a world war. It's as simple as that. The only problem is we're not fighting it as though we are in a world war. You see, if we understood that, and if they came to the American public and said that, that would be cause for then going on to say, and that is why we must maintain a force in Iraq, so as not to give up the gains that we have given so much to achieve. And here we have proof now.
Well, again, the premise that Al-Qaeda has been defeated. The premise that they're basically impotent, and that's what this administration told us. And that, amongst how many other bald-faced lies. And this lie has murdered, and two towns now are being taken over.
They have been taken over. Not going to be, they have been. And as Lair said, you know, our response is, well, this is for you guys to straighten out on your own.
Oh, now, but you have our support.
As I said, if we had no interests in the reason, we may not care, although I would still say that that would be stupid. Because once they get finished rounding everybody up over there, they're going to come over here. I mean, if 9/11/2001 didn't tell you something, I don't know what will. But you
again, just everything that we did to not get to this point.
Well, and just think of 9/11/2001. I can't remember where I saw it, but I remember that there was a program about 9/11, okay? And the guy that pulled off the original World Trade Center bombing when they exploded the truck down in the basement, you remember that? That
was a couple people.
1993, it sent smoke all up through the building, and a lot of people were injured and stuff.
They evacuated my building. I lived in New York.
Though. Okay, they caught him. They caught the blind sheikh. The blind sheikh's the one in prison now, Mohammed Morsi was on the verge of demanding his return before he got locked up himself. Thank God Almighty for the general who had the guts to do that. But the fella who actually carried out the footwork, or one of them, I remember in this special, an FBI agent talking about the way they got him in and out of the courthouse in New York was by helicopter. And his last visit to the courthouse, as he was leaving by helicopter from the rooftop, they were looking out at the World Trade Center. And he said, I may not have gotten the job done, but someone else will. And what he meant was to bring those buildings to the ground. That was what they tried to do the first time. That's why they set the bomb off in the basement. They thought that it would undermine the foundation of the building and it would topple.
They just did it from the other end. Well, they did it top-down the next
time. Instead of bottom-up.
Yeah, right. Well, one of the goals that George Bush was after, he achieved. And that was those purple thumbs. And
he
the thing is, in those two cities now, there's not going to be purple thumbs. We did what we achieved something, and this president let those two cities into a situation where purple thumbs be damned, democracy be damned.
Right, and the point that I'm leading up to culminates in what Lair's talking about, and that is that if we don't take care of business over there, they're going to bring their business over here. And they will, time is, they believe, on their side. Time, in their culture, time really kind of doesn't even exist. And there's a lot of truth to that. We'll talk about that some other night. But when you live in the desert, time is not something like we see it. So they have a lot of patience. Okay? Endurance is a part of their life. We get upset if we don't get French fries in 2 minutes.
Oh, I hate that.
Okay? They live in a desert. Okay, where they do without. That's the way they live their life. That's the part of their history. So they can wait us out. And when Obama gives up tremendous gains, which Lair has been referring to, it makes it easier for them to wait us out. And this is what neither President Bush or Obama has spelled out to the American public, that we are in a basically a fight for our civilization, a fight for our lives against a relentless enemy who will not go away, and therefore, whether we like it or not, we cannot go away either.
Well, the point of my opening, though, Chris, was as horrible as this enemy is, I'm afraid that one that we have here in our country is worse. I think it's far more insidious. I think we can survive. And you're right. It's to close our eyes to it. But I think we don't have any choice on that. I think with the Secretary of State and this President, we don't have a choice in any foreign affairs right now. I hear McCain and Graham are raising you know what about it. But the fact of the matter is, I think the enemy is upon us.
Well, I've
much closer.
Well, I don't know if I would use the word enemy, but certainly.
Well, they did.
Certainly, there are forces at work which, let's just say, a pajama boy president was no accident. It was no quirk of fate. It was no doing of Obama all on his own. He is the culmination of something, just like de Blasio is a culmination of something, which we'll talk about later on. But part of the problem is that our government is not direct and honest with the American public.
Now, to his credit, President Bush said that a week after 9/11, that we are in a worldwide war against terrorism. But then you heard nothing from that point till the end of his administration.
Because the suits all got to him. See, he was absolutely right. And we are still in this worldwide war. And now you say, well, what are our interests in the Middle East? I've talked about that. And I'm not talking about oil. Have you ever heard of a place called Israel? You ever heard of that? They sit right in the middle of this. And guess what? They got nuclear weapons.
And lots of oil.
And they have the will to survive as they should. Mm-hmm. And we will be damned if we turn our back on them. All right, we got a hard break we're going to have to go to, but we'll continue this discussion when we get back.
Problem is, we don't control the forces, and someone in the White House does, and it's just, you know, when he unleashes the dogs, that's when they go.
Well,
if he don't unleash them,
it's part of the problem is they've already been unleashed.
And the thing is, we're going to talk about
when we get back.
Yeah, the rest of the world is saying, sorry, like Perry said, you're on your own.
Adversaries, where you and the president can wrestle for the truth.
We're still in this wrestling match with
Blair Adams
and
Christopher Hart, the American Adversary on 660 WORL and on 1520 The Biz.
It's not an eating contest, boys. I'm just having a couple of almonds in between the break. They're really good. They're covered with wasabi, you know, that Japanese horseradish, and they're very tasty.
Oh, I thought that was dog slobber.
Anyway, we're the American Adversaries, and we're a half hour into our three-hour tour. You can still see us if you stand at the edge of the shoreline. We'll wave to you all. Hi! Yeah, see you at 8 o'clock when we get back. Gilligan!
There you go. 407-774-8255 is our number. And don't forget to keep that number handy because we will be giving away some Roxy Pacifics tonight, the great new all-natural kelp-based antibacterial, anti-inflammatory. And, of course, you'll also need that number when we do our Who Said That contest tonight. And you need that number if you just want to call and be a part of the show.
Is Johnny Gunn's the millionaire or Jennifer?
I so wish I was a millionaire.
Oh, okay. 3 hour
right.
Tour.
There you go.
Who's Jennifer?
Hurston Howell. Or not who the redhead.
Ginger.
Ginger.
Ginger. How quickly we forget.
Can you believe it?
It's only
him?
Been 50 years. Come on.
All right. The situation in Iraq is deteriorating, has been for some time, and it is sectarian violence. We've talked about this on the show before. It's basically a feud. Some say that it goes back 700 years. It actually goes back to the time when the very last breath exited Muhammad's body. His successors started fighting over who should be the main dog. And the people who were his cousins and therefore had a blood relation to him said that they should be the leaders. And they eventually have evolved. Well, they didn't evolve into. They are who we know today as the Shia Muslims, who are the Iranians, the Persians, and there's also that that element discrimination there, where you have the Arabs who hate the Persians. And then the Arabs are mostly Sunni Muslims who felt that just because you were a cousin of Muhammad didn't make you anything special. And so they do not claim any blood ties to Muhammad, but they claim that they understand the Quran better. This is the heart of the blood feud. And then you bring into that, of course, the West and the fact that these two elements both would like to see the West gone, or at least dominated by them, we have a real prickly situation, you might say. And how can the United States solve it? Well, we started. We started in Afghanistan. We got results. We started in Iraq. We got results.
Purple thumbs.
And then that's where we stopped. And we stopped because we didn't have, well, what did the article say? That there doesn't exist now? Well, it didn't exist then either.
The will
to carry this thing through. Lara mentioned Al-Qaeda not being defeated. They were defeated in Iraq. They were kicked out of Iraq.
Run out.
By the Americans and the Iraqis themselves. When they saw that America, part of it was the surge. When they saw that President Bush had the courage to put more boots on the ground, they said, well, by golly, maybe they're actually good for their word for a change.
And the guy that said that was a bad idea turns around and does the same thing himself and crows over it.
Well, that, of course, would be Barack Obama.
But that didn't defeat them. All that did was drive them into hiding where they could do just what you said in the last break.
Wait.
Sit and wait.
We killed many of them, however. But you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And so what we needed to do was pursue them to the next stop.
True.
We needed to issue warnings to both Iran and Syria. And by the way, do you remember when the only significant interruption in the Iranian nuclear program occurred? Do you happen to remember?
No.
And this is according to the UN and the IEA.
Wasn't that the computer virus?
No. Okay. I'm not talking about that because they were actively pursuing.
Oh,
when
okay.
they voluntarily dialed back their program, was in about mid-2003. Now, what happened in March of 2003?
Yeah, we invaded Iraq.
We invaded Iraq.
Yeah.
And we kicked Saddam Hussein's patoot out of there. And then by December, we had drug him out of his hole and stretched his neck a few months later, okay? That didn't go unnoticed by the Iranians. They suspended their program because they thought, well, by God, this George W. Bush might come over here and do something to us.
We could be
and
next.
And by God, George W. Bush should have. Because he had every opportunity, because they then went on to restart their program when they saw he was not going to do anything about what they were doing inside Iraq, which was to arm and train the militants with those IEDs. The IED technology was coming from Iran. The militants were coming through Syria. He had every right and every responsibility to take the war into both of those countries. Yes, I said it. Because we need to be fighting this war like it is World War II. With the intent to end it dramatically and decisively. With victory. That is how we fought World War II. That is how we liberated Europe and kept the rest of the world free.
And that's the last time America did anything like that.
That's the last time we fought a war right
in Korea.
Right. And look at what has
Vietnam.
Happened since.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is the American public satisfied? No. Of course they're not. Because we're not fighting the doggone war to win it. And that's where Pajama Boy fits in so perfectly. The Pajama Boy president. I don't want to fight the war. It's too hard. It's too upsetting.
People might get killed.
People
too
might
savage.
Get killed. Now, and I have two nephews that I love dearly, like my own children, because I don't have any children of my own. And they are both in the Army.
And they both enlisted knowing what the consequences might be. And knowing that it was important for them to protect our citizens.
And they've both done tours of duty. Over there, and four between them. all told. And guess what? If we don't fight this war, they or the next generation is going to have to fight it again. Just like when we held the Marines out of Fallujah the first time. The problem did not go away. The problem got worse and demanded our attention, and it will do so again. Now you might say, well, Israel's not worth protecting. Let them fight. Let them do it on their own. Well, let's just imagine for a moment, okay, we do that. All right, and then we're going to turn ourselves away from in the Middle East oil. We got all the oil we need right here in the United States, which is absolutely true. Unfortunately, oil is traded on the world market. And the price of oil in the Middle East affects the price of oil, guess where else?
Everywhere.
In the United States, actually, everywhere. You're absolutely right. So whether we like it or not, and that's not even to consider the fact, as I've said before, the real serious main threat is they want to conquer us all. This is no different than fighting the Nazis. It's no different than fighting the communists. We are fighting people who want to conquer us. And until we get a president that's got nads enough to stand up and say it in a way that people can understand it, we're going to have a serious problem. And as Lair said leading into out of the last segment, the cow's out of the barn. Syria is an absolute mess. None other than Bill Clinton understands this. Bill Clinton cannot figure out, save the life of him, why Barack Obama didn't have something going on in Syria to try to at least keep the lid on that. Because eventually the lid is going to blow. And when it blows, what's the president going to have to, is his excuse?
Well, the American public didn't want me to do anything about it.
That's a bozo excuse. Yeah, that's a pajama boy excuse. Which is why I say we have a pajama boy president. At least Bill Clinton had a little bit of nerve. Not nearly enough, because he let the Al-Qaeda problem fester between 1993, when they originally attacked the World Trade Center, and 2001, when they brought it down. Well, because he had Obama and Bin Laden in his sights, we know, at least three times.
Osama Bin Laden.
Not the other guy.
You said Obama.
I pulled a Ted Kennedy.
The thing is,
Osama Obama.
Bill Clinton was a little bit more open to listening to his military advisors that admittedly knew much more than him. We have a president now who, I'm sorry,
Bill Clinton is more of a man than Barack Obama.
We talked about
this last week, how the United States needs a dose of manhood. All you got to do is look at our wimp of a president, and that makes the argument for
us. Pajama boy president?
You got it.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
See, Bill Clinton, at least it might have been the worst characteristics of a man, but at least he was more of a man. And that's the bottom line. This president got no guts at all.
I think there's two peas in a pod.
Except when it comes to fighting Republicans. Then he seems to have all the nerve that he needs. He can muster it all up then.
Yeah, they both avoided military service. They both really have never... They were not friendly to the military.
Well, don't you actually have to be a U.S. citizen to be in the U.S. military? Ooh, I'm sorry. What did I say?
Why? Bill Clinton's not a U.S.
No, I'm not talking about that. Whatever.
There you go again.
Making trouble.
All right. So that's the situation. Don't expect it to get any better as long as we have a bunch of pajama boys running around the White House. And by the way, Barack Obama is not the only one in there. The whole crowd of them, they're all a bunch of doggone pajama boys.
That's the scariest thing that you mentioned now, Chris. That's the problem with so much of America. We've got an America that is full of pajama boy men and women. And that's the part I don't know. How do you fight it?
Well, we'll try to get Cecile Paglia on, and perhaps she'll help us figure it out. We'll be right back, folks.
This is Mark Merrill, former WCW World Television Champion, Johnny B. Bad. It's a good day to be a bad man, but it's even a better day to listen to the American adversaries. And you better listen. Don't let me come and get you, because it's going to be a blessing to teach you a lesson.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries on our three-hour tour. 407-774-8255 is the number. I just want to kind of sew up a little loose end here before we move on with Nostradamus predicting the past. But I got this from Marshall during one of the breaks. During the break here, he says they have to change the engagement rules. He's absolutely right about that. He's talking about the rules of engagement. And that's a symptom, though, I would say, Marshall, of an overall more larger problem, and that is just the whole attitude where we do this. By the way, there's a great new movie coming out. It's called Lone Survivor. It's about Marcus Luttrell and the four-member sniper team of SEALs that went into Afghanistan. And because of the nature of rules of engagement, put themselves at great risk and their mission at risk rather than be able to go in there and basically take care of business. And it's just one mission, if you will, it encapsulates a lot of the, if you will, problems with war and how difficult it is to fight.
That whole catch and release thing that so many soldiers had a problem with. There was a little kid they had that they knew if they let him go, they were going to be found out, they were going to be shot at. So their choices were kill the little kid or let him go and wait for the fire.
Actually, there have been other incidents, but in this particular case, these guys were stumbled upon by four, what were they, sheep herders or something like that.
Yeah, go herders.
Gave him up.
Right. And they basically had the option of silencing them mm-hmm. or allowing them to go free. And they discussed it. And the rules of engagement basically made it clear you can't do anything to them. So they had to let them go free according to the rules of engagement. And they went straight to the Taliban. And within a couple of hours, the SEALs found themselves surrounded.
By 200 men.
Only Marcus Luttrell came out of there alive. It's a mm-hmm. fantastic story. The movie, as I understand, very good. There's a book about it that's probably even better because it really does. The movie tries to.
It's a Hollywood movie. It's a Hollywood war movie.
Well, evidently, it's done quite well.
Right.
All right, let's just leave it at that. But nonetheless. It's just this whole attitude. We think that, for instance, by not doing something about the four goat herders, that we might have, you know, done something better in the overall scheme of the war. One must begin to wonder. You know, there have been theologians who've written about war and what is a just war and what is not a just war. And a just war is one that is fought quickly and decisively. And it doesn't say anything about letting goat herders go. Quickly and decisively. See, we don't fight wars quickly and decisively. We fight them politely, and all that gets is a bunch of more people killed.
That increases the pain, it increases the suffering.
Absolutely, because you're increasing the time frame. You're allowing more and worse bad things to happen.
Isn't that why we dropped the bombs on
exactly.
Japan?
That's especially why we dropped the second one, because after the first one, Japan still didn't surrender.
That's right. That is the nature of the beast. And I'm sorry to say it, but if it takes killing four goat herders to end a war sooner, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. But that is the nature of the war. And that is, in the long run, it would have been better. Because they would have accomplished their mission. A major leader of the Taliban would have been eliminated. Who knows how many lives would have been saved.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, these four men actually decimated much of the enemy. I mean, numbers, I mean, we lost three out of four men, and they nearly...
Right. Before those three died, the four of them mowed down about 170 of the...
I was going to say, like...
So was it better for the SEALs to kill 170 men or four?
Right.
Right? Because if they'd have killed the four goat herders, they could have accomplished their mission, which was to take out the leadership and then get out, not kill 170 in a firefight.
Okay. That's not what they were there for.
Not what they were there for. But it is now time for Jeff.
Nostradamus.
Thank you.
Predict.
Yes.
The past.
The past. Thank you very much, 5 Minute Professor. It is time for us to go through some of the stories that we were going to get to over the past 5 weekdays, but Couldn't get to because we had just so much of a jam-packed show that we couldn't do it.
And there's that nasty thing called New Year's.
That's true. That got in the way.
Yeah, it got in the way.
Got in the way. You remember Melissa Harris Perry. We talked about her on this segment last week.
Yeah.
She was the one who made snide comments about Mitt Romney's black grandchild and was taken to task for it. She decided she was going to apologize.
By the way, this grandchild is an infant.
Yeah, it's a baby. Yep. It's a baby. A year old.
It's okay to pick on infants.
She relayed a tearful apology to MSNBC's listeners on her Saturday show.
Yesterday morning.
And immediately afterwards, another panelist on the show, Katrina VandenHeuvel, decided she would sling some more racial slurs against the Republican Party. She claimed, VandenHeuvel, that there's a useful populism on the left and the right that is anti-corporate but not anti-business. And if not for that darn Tea Party, there'd be a lot more cooperation. Because those Tea Partiers are racist. You know, you apologize for one thing and then you stick your foot right back in the same thing.
Oh, gosh. Well, like I say, we need MSNBC to display to the world the idiocy that is known as liberalism. And they do such an excellent job of it.
Oh, did you say idiocy?
Yes.
Let me get to this next story. A U.S. judge on Tuesday struck down a Florida law requiring drug screening for welfare recipients, saying it violated the constitutional protection against unreasonable searches. Florida Governor Rick Scott said he would appeal the ruling. U.S. District Judge Mary Scriven permanently halted enforcement of the law. She agreed with an earlier court finding that there's nothing inherent in the condition of being impoverished that supports the conclusion that there is a concrete danger that impoverished individuals are prone to drug use. The suit was filed in U.S. District Court here in Orlando on behalf of Luis Lebron, a former U.S. Navy veteran, college student, and a single father with sole custody of his then 5-year-old son. He was denied benefits when he refused to take the test.
Hmm. Well, there's one way to solve this. Just vote yes for medical marijuana.
That would do it, wouldn't
it? Kill two birds with one stone, right?
That would do it.
Get it? Two birds with one
stone. Yeah, dude. The Pope has announced that he's going to be taking a weekend trip to Israel in May. He's going to travel to Israel, the West Bank, and Jordan. And it marks the Pope's first trip to the Holy Land and so far his only foreign travel planned this year. Francis told those gathered in the rain for his weekly Sunday blessing today that he would visit Amman, Bethlehem, and Jerusalem. The prime aim is to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the historic meeting in Jerusalem between Pope Paul VI and the then spiritual leader of the world's Orthodox Christians, Ecumenical Patriarch Aten Gora. Francis will be joined in Jerusalem by the current Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew. They'll celebrate Mass together at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where the faithful believe Jesus was crucified and buried.
Oh, how do you like that? Is that it? Do you have another one?
I got one more.
All right, let's hear it.
You know, where are the most popular places for shootings and places that ban guns?
Right.
Did you hear about the terrible story that happened on Christmas Day in Chicago? A pregnant woman was shot and killed during a robbery attempt. Hmm. Here's the thing, though. She was one of the people who was setting up the robberies.
Whoops.
Yeah. Here's what happened. Her name was Eva Cassara, a 26-week pregnant teen from south suburban Dalton, Illinois. The baby, though, was born alive and is doing well in the hospital. But what happened was Cassara's purse, cell phone, and money were missing, lending credence to her having been the victim of a robbery. But ultimately, police discovered that she was one of the ones who helped plan the robbery and was shot by one of her own Confederates when the robbery began to go wrong. But, you know, that's going to go down in the statistics as another victim of gun violence.
Yeah.
Even though she's the one who put herself in that position.
Yeah. Certainly it... Certainly she did, unfortunately.
That's like shooting yourself.
Yeah.
And you're a
not
victim of gun violence.
That's right.
Which there,
even accidentally.
Which is what a lot of the proponents of gun restrictions say. So,
a lot of the child victims of violence are kids in their late teens who shoot each other in drive-bys and as part of gang violence.
Right, right.
You got one too, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually got a couple here. Where should I go on this? I don't have a lot of time here. Did you hear that Dear Culling is to resume in Washington, D.C.
Who is Deer Culling?
Deer Culling might more accurately be said as Deer Killing. And that's according to the National Park Service. Did you know that there is a problem with white-tailed deer in Rock Creek Park in Washington, D.C.?
Don't they know they shouldn't be in Washington, D.C.?
Now, what I want to know is why can't they round them up, trap them, whatever? You know, this is the caring administration, right?
Catch and release.
Catch them and release them somewhere else. That's right. No, they're going to kill them. They're going to, quote-unquote, cull them. The nighttime hunts by Department of Agricultural shooters in Rock Creek Park will continue until March 31st or until 106 deer have been killed, an official said. The public should be safe because joggers and cyclists are generally barred from the park after dark. Well, if they aren't, they better they better be running with their heads down low, because
get ready, guys.
I know some guys who would be willing to help you out.
Get ready.
One of those 106 deer.
This is Obamacare. This is Obamacare. The herd will be culled.
Ooh, don't like the sound of that.
Your hometown station, 1520 WPCW, Apopka, Altamont Springs, a service of Salem Communications. Part of...
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They team with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Excuse me while I take off my championship belt, or just loosen it up a little bit. The American adversaries are here, the best in political professional wrestling, the tag team champs. Larry Adams here with Christopher Hart, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns. Behind the glass we have Mr. Jeff. How you doing, Jeff? That's okay. He's not behind the microphone.
How many
okay.
people are allowed to be in a tag team? I know there were three executioners back in the day.
Normally a tag team's two, but
yeah.
they have tag team matches pretty much unlimited.
Yeah, I've seen six-man tag team matches. You got
Survivor Series
side.
Yeah. Yep. In that case, we're a big tag team.
That's right. The baddest.
All right, Christopher Hart, our host, and Chris, buddy de Blasio. Or is
well,
it
before
de Blasio?
Before we move on to talk about the new progressive era, at least in New York.
Error.
Yeah, error. I like that's a better way to put it. I want to tie up a couple of things from the last hour. First of all, we went out talking about the deer culling, which is to resume in Washington, D.C. And by the way, I don't think Phil Robertson has been invited to that.
No?
No.
Why not?
Well,
he's good at that.
That just wouldn't do. But have you heard about the guy, and I wish I had this story in front of me, and I'm sorry I don't. I believe it's in New Hampshire or Maryland or somewhere like that. I can't say. I don't know if it's a guy or not. Evidently, they have found two bald eagles that were shot dead. All right, and they evidently think it's done by the same person. And there is an all-out manhunt to find this person who shot those two eagles dead. And the reason they want to find him is they want to know if, instead of next time shooting them, which can actually land him in jail, he would just go out and build himself a wind turbine, and then if the wind turbine kills the bald eagles, it won't be any problem, and they won't have to chase him down.
That's all good.
It was in Maryland. Johnny just pulled the story up. Am I missing any details on that, Johnny?
No, you pretty much covered it.
Yeah, so there's an all-out manhunt to find this person, which, oh, by the way, hundreds of bald eagles are killed every year by the wind turbines, and we've already talked about that. And then Johnny has something from Marcus Latrell on the four goat herders that they found.
Yeah, pop over here to an article I found on UT San Diego, going back to, again, what Chris was saying, Marcus Luttrell. They said that they released the herders. This is Luttrell and the three other members of the Navy SEALs. They released the herders following American rules of engagement that dictate no killing of unarmed people. According to Luttrell's 2007 book, they discussed at the time whether shooting the goat herders would open them up to murder charges back home. And I want to go to one other part of the article here.
Which I'm sure it would have.
That's what happened to John Hatley. Right. He was told to catch and release some Iraqi citizens who had been aiming their guns at them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Luttrell said that their decision to set the goat herders free will always haunt him. In a 60 Minutes interview aired December 8th, Luttrell was asked if, in hindsight, he wishes they had killed the herders instead. Quote, sure, and got my friends back. Who knows what the outcome would have been? Yes, I wish I would have. Unquote.
Okay, great movie, Lone Survivor. I don't normally advocate spending money on Hollywood, but this is one where you might want to go see it, at least pick it up if it comes when it comes out on
DVD. Luttrell was involved intricately with the production of the movie, and the director, and the trailers at least, he gets it. He gets what their mission was.
And what I was trying to relate earlier is they, in the movie, they try very hard and evidently very successfully to put you in that situation with them without giving up too much information on how they actually do business, because they're still out there taking care of business. All right. Let's go ahead and talk now about Bill de Blasio. And the new era of progressivism that he himself has ushered into New York City. And I want to talk about this in particular because he spent a lot of his time, as well did many of the speakers at his inaugural ceremony the other day, which included the likes of Bill Clinton and Harry Belafonte and others, who basically trashed New York City as it exists today.
And America.
And America in general. New York City in particular, but America in general.
With the former mayor sitting right there, Mr. Mayor Bloomberg.
Sitting there stoned.
Harry Belafonte's been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, putting down America and hanging out with communists. So I guess he felt right at home with de Blasio, who, by the way, during the 80s hung out with the communists down there in Central America and provided them aid and comfort as they killed and slaughtered freedom-loving people.
I wonder if those people down there used horses to maybe pull people around or something. No.
If anything, they used horses to pull people apart.
Yeah.
That's the way they do
things. But now
things.
We can't use them in
other parts of the world. But, yeah, now he wants to do away with the buggies, the carriages in New York City. I mean, New York City's in the best shape it's been. More so because of Giuliani, but and to a certain extent, thanks to Michael Bloomberg.
He didn't let it slip from where Giuliani handed the reins over.
He got a little carried away with himself and the Cokes and all that, you know, the large cups and all that stuff.
Don't forget the trans fats.
But nonetheless, when it comes down to the basics of keeping a live, vibrant city, he did. And how we're going to get a clear contrast, because this guy's already going down the war path. And this is, he's just using the same playbook, if you will, as Barack Obama, which is why I wanted to go with this direction tonight, because this is the direction of the liberals. He's absolutely right. It is a progressive era, only it's not being ushered in now. It was ushered in about 100 years ago, and it's culminating now. It is culminating in guys like this, a communist, a purebred communist who aided communists who were killing people in Central America, is now the mayor of New York City. I don't know if that's worse or Barack Obama is president of the United States. At least he didn't participate in any rebel groups that we know of, anyway.
I was excited. Did you hear the invocation that was presented before he was sworn in? I have this. I want to read a sentence or two.
Please.
Reverend Fred Lucas of the Brooklyn Community Church, who is a chaplain for the Sanitation Department.
Yep.
I didn't even know the Sanitation Department had a chaplain, but whatever. He says, let the plantation called New York City be the city of God, a city set upon a hill, a light shining in the darkness. And then he turns to de Blasio and says, through your divine leadership, emancipate every New Yorker from the shackles of fear, futility, and frustration, from poverty, homelessness, and helplessness. I thought that was great because that would probably mean they're going to reinstate stop and frisk. They're going to lower taxes. Yeah? No?
No.
No?
No, I don't think so. No,
I don't get it then.
Nah. Nah. No, that's not exactly what they had in mind at all. No, and then Belafonte got up and talked about the Dickensian justice system. When Bill Clinton made an overture, you know, of compliment to Mayor Bloomberg, evidently he got booed by the crowd.
Liberals do this all the time.
This was a progressive love fest.
Yes, where they eat each other up.
Well, they love each other. Well, they were.
Well, the booers weren't loving it.
They'll find out in a year or two, or maybe three, that elections have consequences, and they're going to get the government they deserve.
Well, that's true, but you have to understand that, and I think we've talked about this on our show before. I know others have, and that is that progressives profit from chaos. All right, so if the man creates chaos, don't think that that's going to necessarily bring him down. Look at how much chaos Barack Obama has had to create in the American society, in the world, for people to finally wise up to the Joker, right? I mean, it's taken Obamacare for people to realize that the man's been lying to the American public ever since he came along. And yet it was quite obvious for anybody who wanted to look and see it. But people didn't want to see it.
They didn't see it because they didn't want to see
now,
it.
Have either one of you seen the ads on Fox News that New York is running, asking you to bring your business to New York? We have all sorts of tax incentives, and you won't pay taxes for 5 years. Of course, at the end of those 5 years, you will pay everything you can imagine.
You better believe it. And
That's why Florida's going to be number three.
It's not going to work because people are a little bit smarter than that. And when this guy goes raising taxes and doing this and the other thing,
there'll be another wave of rich people moving out of New York, right, out of the five boroughs.
Absolutely. Is that why we're going to be the third largest state and they're not?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, Peggy Noonan wrote an article this week in the Wall Street Journal about how he chose to be confrontational, and which that's what we've been talking about here. And that's the wrong track to take. Now,
About Barack or...
She was talking about de Blasio.
De Blasio, yeah.
But they're one and the same, and that's why I want to talk about them here. There was an article that came out in Tuesday's Wall Street Journal called Obama's Envy Problem. Excuse me. It was written by Brett Stevens. And it's something that we talked a little bit about here. And he doesn't go so much into the statistics as he does the philosophy of this. He talks about Barack Obama's speech right before he went, you know, on his vacation, and this could have come right out of the de Blasio speech, and he quotes him, "Ordinary folks can't write massive campaign checks or hire high-priced lobbyists and lawyers to secure policies that tilt the playing field in their favor at everyone else's expense." Well, now he's an authority on this because his administration does that all day long. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And so people get the bad taste that the system is rigged, and that increases cynicism and polarization, and it decreases the political participation that is a requisite part of our system of self-government. Okay? This is the guy who sold us out to the unions, sold us out to insurance companies because he's going to bail them out, sold us out to Wall Street and others, all right? And he's lecturing all of us.
And whose goal is a single-payer system.
Right. But this fellow, Brett Stevens, talks about some things that Alex de Tocqueville said. Alex de Tocqueville, of course, was very, very famous. Okay, looks like we're going to have to go to the break. We'll go ahead and go to the break. And when we come back, we'll pick this up with Alex de Tocqueville and what he says is the phenomena that we're experiencing here, if you will. And we'll continue this conversation on the American Adversaries, our three-hour tour.
That's why we're here to welcome you to 2014. If you'd like to call us, 407-774-8255. We'll be back.
All right, welcome back, folks. I hope you're out there enjoying the show this evening. 407-774-8255 is the number. We were talking about de Blasio and kicking off his progressive era in New York City, talking about income inequality and all the things that President Obama has now started talking about. And you can bet your bottom dollar you're going to be hearing a lot more about this over the next few weeks and the next months leading up to the election. You know, Congress is coming back tomorrow. Harry Reid has already said the first thing is going to be to extend once more the unemployment compensation benefits. And then they're going to start talking about raising the minimum wage, all of these things on the back of this moral argument that they're trying to make here about income inequality. But it's a fool's dream, if you will. And this is what de Tocqueville talked about. He said, democratic institutions awaken and foster a passion for equality, which they can never entirely satisfy. So they're doomed to failure from the beginning. The Democrats know this. They know that their attempts to achieve equality are doomed to failure. If they succeed, we'll have communism, because that's where you have equality.
Also, if they succeed ultimately, then they'll no longer be relevant.
Exactly. So they don't intend for them to succeed. They intend for them to fail because it works for them politically. Unfortunately, it doesn't work very well for the people at the lower end of the economy who get... you know what, all over. Let me read on. He says, this equality eludes the grasp of the people at the very moment that they think they have grasped it. He goes on, he said, and one result is democratic institutions strongly tend to promote the feeling of envy. They also promote a depraved taste for equality, which impels the weak to attempt to lower the powerful to their own level and reduces men to prefer equality in slavery to inequality with freedom. And that says it so quite so well. In order for Bill de Blasio or Barack Obama or you name your liberal or group to achieve what they want to achieve, everyone would have to give up everything to them, so that they could then equally dole it out, whether it be intelligence, whether it be money, whatever it may, health care.
How about good looks?
You name it, good buddy.
I need some of that.
All right, well.
We're really talking about power here, aren't we?
Exactly what we're talking about. And he talks about, like Barack Obama said, Barack Obama was talking about 1979 as though this was some glorious year, right? This was at like the depths of Carterism. He talks about the top 10% no longer takes in one-third of our income. It now takes in half, he said. In other words, in 79, he said the top 10% took in one-third of the income. Now it takes in half. Just remember that. Suggesting that the rich are eating a larger share of the national pie. And then Obama went on to say, whereas in the past, the average CEO made about 20 to 30 times the income of the average worker. Today's CEO now makes 273 times more. But he didn't mention, by the way, that back in those days, the average sports star made about 20 to 30 times, if that, the average worker, and now makes 200 to 300 times the average worker. Thank you, LeBron James, and all you high-priced crybabies out there.
And he doesn't add the fact, too, that during his administration, the wealthy have profited more.
Well, you just jumped to the last paragraph, but I'll get there. And meanwhile, this is Obama again, and meanwhile, a family in the top 1% has net worth 288 times higher than the typical family, which is a record for this country. Now, the author says, here is a factual error marred by an analytical error and compounded by a moral error. It's the top 20%, not 10%, which Obama said, the top 20% that take in just over half of aggregate income, according to the Census Bureau. That figure is essentially unchanged since the mid-1990s when Bill Clinton was president and is not dramatically different from 1979 when the top 20% took in 44%. 44% is a lot more than 33% and less than, let's just say this, it is closer to 50% than it is to 33%, right? Right?
Yep.
Sure is.
Well, our genius president, our genius, the smartest president in history, can't seem to figure this out unless he's lying again. And of course, Obama went on to say, but let's look at the income rise. The income rise from 2009, the median household income was $4,006. By 2012, the mean household of the bottom 20%, the mean household income was $4,006. That's an average. By 2012, it was $11,500. That's an increase of 186%. For the middle class, the increase was 211%. For the top, for the richest, it was 320%. Do you see a trend here? In other words, the more you got, the more you gain as you go along in our system. But even the poor are gaining tremendously.
The rich got richer, but the poor got less poor.
Exactly. They got richer, too.
Compared to the poor of the past.
Now, let me read the final two paragraphs of the article here. The moral greatness of capitalism rests in the fact that it is the only economic system where one person's gain can be another's also. This is what the liberals can't seem to figure out. They think, for instance, if I gain, there's some poor sap out there who's losing as a result of it.
More right? pie for you, less pie for me.
Except when it comes to them, like Obama and Clinton, they can gain all they want. The Hineses, the Careys, they can have all they want, and somehow it doesn't affect anybody else. But if we do it, if a small businessman does it, if a Republican or a Tea Party member does it, if a big corporation does it, it's obviously got to be hurting somebody else out there. Just obvious. They can't seem to figure this out. Let me start again. The moral greatness of capitalism rests in the fact that it is the only economic system where one person's gain can be another's also, where Steve Jobs' billions are his shareholders' thousands. I mean, if you had bought 1,000 shares a few years ago, and I kicked myself in the butt for not doing this, when Apple was $2 a share, if you had bought 1,000 shares for $2,000, you would have now $500,000. And a lot of people did just that. Let me read on. He made other people wealthy by getting wealthy himself, in other words. Capitalism cultivates a sense of admiration where envy would otherwise rule in a zero-sum economic system. In what for the past 60 years has blunted the democratic tendency toward envy in the United States and distinguished its free market democracy from the social democracies of Europe. It's what draws people to this country. In other words, when we admire people for being successful, that is good. When we envy what they have, that is bad. Let me finish out. Somewhere in the rubble of Mr. Obama's musings on inequality, there was a better speech on economic mobility. Then again, under Mr. Obama, the median income of the poorest Americans has declined in absolute terms from $11,490 in 2012 from $11,552 in 2009. Not a very significant fall, but nonetheless a fall. And chalk it up as another instance of Mr. Obama being the cause of the very problems he aspires to address. And I would simply say you can substitute liberals or any liberal for Obama there. So in other words, chalk it up as another instance of liberals being the cause of the very problems they aspire to address.
Yeah, don't get mad at a snake. If snake bites you. Same with a bad dog or something like that. So
liberals are.
If they're liberals.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, that's it. Folks, we'll be back. Don't forget, 774-8255.
Hey, folks, this is pro wrestler and WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and I listen to the American Adversaries on Newstalk 660, WORL. Tough guy.
Welcome back to the American Adversaries. Thanks for listening, everybody. We've got Jeff Sinis here, and in the studio, we've got Chris, we've got Lair, we've got Nostradamus, and myself, Johnny Guns. And you, sitting there within the sound of our voice, I want you to get up out of that easy chair right now and head on over to the wall where you got that newfangled rotary phone there. I want you to pick up the receiver and start dialing this number. Put your finger in the four hole and turn it around, and it goes... And then dial a 0, and then a 7, and then a 774-8255. Where'd my sound effects go? 8255. There we go. Because it is time for you to win great prizes with our Who Said That contest.
That's right. A $20 gift card to Cafe Positano is on the table, along with a beautiful 2014 calendar from our great congressman over on the coast there, Bill Posey. So if you want to get in on this, that's right. You got the number. You know how to play the game. We say a quote. All you have to do is call us up and tell us who said it, and you win the prizes. So, and by the way, once again, I want to thank everybody who came out to join us for New Year's Eve at Cafe Positano. We had a great time. And, you know, with Valentine's Day coming up, it'd be a great place to take that special someone. All right. Who said, always forgive your enemies? Nothing annoys them so much. If you know who said that, call us at 407-774-8255. You know I'm big on forgiveness around here. Always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much. Who said that? Always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much. What brought this to mind was you brought it up in Nostradamus Predicts the Past about Melissa Harris Perry and what they said about Mitt Romney, because Mitt was on Fox's Sunday morning show this morning with Wallace.
And he was gracious, and he was right spot on. He said, hey, you know, people make mistakes. They apologized. I accept their apology. Let's move on.
He also said something else.
What else?
He said, He forgives them.
Well, yeah, of course.
That's what
I said. I forgive them. We move on.
That's very important that we say that part. You know, so always.
You know, I've never heard Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton, either one of those reverends, say that.
No, you and probably won't ever, because they're the farthest thing from reverends, even though they use that word.
And furthest thing from forgiving.
Absolutely, but Romney was a class act, and he accepted her apology. And by the way, they showed the apology on Fox. And if I ever have to do that, I want y'all to take me out back here and just shoot me.
Was it sincere?
It appeared to be.
As I heard, you know, that she was definitely emotional.
Yeah, all I can say is it appeared to be sincere.
And it was weird. The earrings she was wearing were a lot smaller than they were last time. I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah, all right. Always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much. If you know who said that, give us a call. And I tell you what, let's go ahead and give away a bottle of Roxy Pacifics while you're at it.
Wow.
If you don't want to participate in the Who Said That contest, but would like a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics and have not gotten one yet, give us a call, 407-774-8255, and you will get a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics on the rocks. That's on Ed Roxy. It's the all-natural kelp water, antibacterial and anti-inflammatory, and this stuff really works on whatever ails you. Poor old Carl's got the flu, and I'm telling him to use it on the flu, and hopefully it'll mitigate his symptoms. But it's really great stuff. So now you have two reasons to call tonight, 407-774-8255 to get a bottle of Roxy Pacifics and to get in on our Who Said That contest. All right, we've got Diane on the line, and she wants to talk about New York City. Diane, thank you for calling tonight. We appreciate
you. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for everything.
Oh, we appreciate you being out there.
And I feel bad about Carl. He needs to slam the vitamin C.
There you go. That's right.
And can you say Detroit as far as New York City goes?
I know it. I mean, if you look at the cities who have had liberal leadership, they're all in the toilet. And so was New York. When you think about it, when Giuliani came along, that city wasn't in great shape.
You couldn't walk through Times Square without getting something on your feet.
Not only that, but when Giuliani took office there that year, over 3,300 people were murdered in New York City.
Yeah, crime was rampant.
You know how many were murdered in New York City last year?
Under 1,000?
About 322, I think it was. Mm. 300. That's
a city of 8 to 9 million
take
people.
Notice.
That's a 90% drop.
Yeah.
And this fool wants to do away with the policies that have brought that safety about. I'm sorry, Diane. Go ahead.
No, that you are absolutely correct. Let's stop doing what works and go back to garbage.
Yeah. And you certainly cannot have horses pulling people around Central Park. You know, right, Diane? I mean, this is just, oh, my gosh. I'm livid over this.
And I want to know, the way you explained what's going on with the economy, Chris, was right on. Well, when I was waiting tables, I would much rather wait on somebody I knew was going to tip me then I knew somebody couldn't barely pay their bill.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. And the liberal solution is not to put people in a position where they can tip, but to put everybody in a position where they need to go out and scrounge for the tips. I hate to put it that way. But
that's exactly right.
But that's what we're talking about here. You know, de Blasio, have you heard of his housing project in New York City? He wants them to start building apartments with 250 square feet.
My bathroom's larger.
Right. They want everybody to live as though they're slaves, you know, in the slave quarters, rather than make it possible for those people to buy into apartments or have apartments that are worth living in. I mean, they just have it upside down. But
sounds like 1984 to me.
Sounds like a third world country to me.
And that's exactly. That is so apropos, given where he spent a good portion of his formative adult years in third world countries fighting with communist rebels.
He misses home.
We could send him back.
I'm in.
That's up to the people in New York, though.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Diane, for calling.
Thank you.
Okay. By the way,
did she say I'm in or amen?
By the way, Peggy Noonan tries to explain how he even got elected in New York City. You have to ask that question. I mean, how did this guy get elected? And basically, for one, the Republicans didn't put up any candidate worth, you know, snot and sneezing at. And second of all, it was an extremely low turnout in this election because, nope, there wasn't anybody there really that people really wanted to vote for. So the people who went out and voted were the people who were excited about de Blasio. And unfortunately, the majority was a very small minority of New York citizens.
It was about 18% of the registered voters in the city.
Who actually voted at all.
Who voted, right.
And so it was about, 10% who voted for de Blasio.
Now, is this a situation where the Republicans basically said, let's hold on to our resources now because it's unwinnable for us?
I don't know. I don't understand the politics in New York enough to be able to make an educated opinion on that.
In New York, even a Republican on the ballot is about as liberal as you can get. You know what I'm saying? Bloomberg was not, by any stretch of imagination, a Republican.
I don't understand why the National Republican Party doesn't have a focused effort in New York City.
Because it's as if they've given up any chance of winning.
That's what I'm thinking.
Maybe so. All right, let's go to the lines now. We have a couple of calls who think they know who said, always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much. Let's go first to our friend Tim. Tim, thank you for calling. Are you over at Cafe Positano tonight?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, I hope you can join us on Wednesday. We'll be there Wednesday this week.
All right. I'm sitting here with the boss.
Oh, yeah, with Pasquale? Okay.
So say hello to Diane for me.
Okay. Hello, Diane from Tim.
Yeah. And I just have to go with Ronald Reagan because it sounds like Ronald Reagan.
It does sound like Ronald Reagan would say it. Actually, he may have even said it at some point, but this person that I have in mind said it before he did. But
you know, that Ronald Reagan saying it would make it a pearl of Irish wisdom, wouldn't it?
It sure would.
And it kind of sort of is.
It kind of sort of is a pearl of Irish, yes, absolutely is.
Ooh, no hint from you, Notre Dame.
I'm just saying.
This particular person was not an American president. Who said this, Tim?
Well,
if you have another guest, Tim, you're welcome to call back. Tell Pasquale Hay over there for us.
And I will do that, and you're off to a great start. First Sunday show of the year. Let's keep her going.
Thank you very much, buddy. Tim. We appreciate it. And boy, did Pasquale ever put on a heck of a fireworks show there the other night.
And most of the fireworks went straight up in the air.
I was going to say, they even had Dennis dancing over there.
Man.
It was a cool show.
Lay Hotfoot.
Oh, yeah.
That was close.
It was a cool show, and it was just boom, boom, whoosh, boom, mm-hmm. and the ashes and stuff were falling in our hair. It was really cool. Yeah, we were like right in the middle of them.
Yeah, it was Ash Wednesday.
All right, let's go to Steve now. Steve thinks he knows who said, always forgive your enemies, nothing annoys them so much. Thank you for calling tonight, Steve. Do you know who said that?
I'm going to guess up there and say Benjamin Franklin.
That's another good, excellent guess. It's incorrect, but it does sound like something that would come from his book of wisdom.
The inventor of the potbelly stove, or the Ben Franklin stove.
By the way, Steve, have you gotten a bottle of Roxy Pacifics yet?
No, I haven't.
Well, I tell you what, if you'll give Jeff your information, we'll at least give you a consolation prize on the rocks, a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics. And this stuff is great stuff. If you don't have chronic skin problems, it's great for cuts, burns, mosquito bites, you name it. It's really good stuff. I want you to try it out, and it's on the rocks.
Well, I appreciate it.
Okay.
Oh, and one thing about de Blasio.
Yes.
He's a firm believer that everybody is equal. It's just some people are more equal than others.
Sure. The liberal mantra.
Yeah, like I read that in a book.
Like the Clintons and the de Blasios Buffetts and the Obamas. Yeah. Excellent.
They're
excellent.
Out of the animal farm. What can we say?
Yeah. That's the point that actually Peggy Noonan makes in her article. She brings out Animal Farm. Thank you, Steve. Excellent call.
Right,
excellent call. Excellent guest. So we still do not have a winner for Always Forgive Your Enemies. Nothing annoys them so much.
But you gave away the Roxy.
Well, we did give away some Roxy, and we'll do it again later on in the show. So if you haven't gotten a bottle yet, you
more.
Still have a chance. Yes, sir. All right. I want to go into a little bit more with this, but I also want to go into a direction of why things are going backwards under Obama and why they will go backwards in New York under de Blasio. Because it's their very own. It's like the guy said, Brett Stevens said at the end of his article, Obama's Envy Problem, where he says that chalk it up as another instance of Mr. Obama. And as I said, you can just substitute liberal or any liberal in there. Chalk it up as another instance of liberals being the cause of the very problems they aspire to address. This is so important because the income inequality and everything that they're talking about, a great deal of that inequality is caused by liberals and liberal policies. And it is because the rich can afford liberalism, the poor cannot.
And that problem can be solved by doing things to make our economy better, which is the opposite of what's been done for the past 5 years.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Okay, I've already asked Jeff to extend this segment, so we'll go ahead and we'll take the break. When we come back, I want to talk about a couple of particular instances that are going on right now of particular interest that make my point and make Stephen's point here, Brett Stevens' point about how liberals being the cause of the very problems that they aspire to address. All right, so don't go away. We're already well over halfway through our three-hour tour, but we still have an hour and a few more minutes to go, so please don't go away.
Don't forget that phone number for... excuse me, I got choked up. 774-8255. Also, we're going to give away some more Roxy, and we're still trying to get an answer as to who said our quote, which is,
always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much.
This is Mark Merrill. You may know me in wrestling as the star Johnny B. Bad. I listen to the American Adversaries, and you should too. Don't let me come and get you, because I'll kick your booty with my two-day booty.
Here goes Johnny B. Bad.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries on our three-hour Sunday evening tour here in Central Florida. Don't forget, we'll be back tomorrow night for our drive time show.
But Larry not for our 3 hours, just a measly 1 hour.
Yeah. All right, so we still do not have an answer for our quote, which I understand is a dandy quote, or at least the person who said it was a dandy.
Well, I thought I had a good clue that he was a dandy and a fop.
Yeah.
But Johnny had a better one.
What's that?
Johnny,
what's the clue?
What, that he was the pajama boy of his generation?
Indeed.
All right. Who's
Metro sexual.
Anyway, said, always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much. So if you know who the dandy was that said that, give us a call. 407-774-8255 is the number. I want to talk a couple of minutes quickly about how liberals and their policies, in order to make the world a better place for all of us, squash the little guy and squash all of us in the process. One has to do with the OSHA and farms. All right, OSHA can only go onto farms that have 10 or more employees. All right. Excuse me. Have more than 10 farms with 10 or fewer employees are not in the jurisdiction of OSHA. which means the small farmer, right? Like the guy who just runs a farm by himself or has a handful of hands who help him out, maybe just
Pa Kent.
Yeah, exactly. And so they haven't been, you know, subject to all the bureaucratic BS and everything that has to do with OSHA. Well, OSHA didn't like that because they want to regulate all farms. This, and including the little farmers, right?
Especially the little ones.
Right. So they basically have redefined what is a farm, okay? And they have now defined farms as commercial grain handlers in order to be able to go in and regulate them. And they have been showing up on farms. They showed up on a farm in Senator Mike Johann in Nebraska, where Senator Mike Johanns is one of the senators. And what they did was they showed up at this guy's farm, and he has one employee, and they issued him citations and fines of more than $130,000. Even though OSHA made no claim that anyone had actually ever been hurt or anything like that. And some of the things that they fined the guy for, he was fined for failing to have written a plan to control fugitive grain dust.
Fugitive grain dust.
Fugitive grain dust. This led to him being fined $130,000 when they shouldn't have been on his farm at all. Because he only has one or two employees. They shouldn't have been there at all. But because they have now declared farmers, what do we call them? Commercial grain handlers.
What if they don't raise grain? What if it's corn? What if it's...
That's grain.
They'll be commercial
what
whatever.
Cattle?
They'll be
what
commercial cow poop handlers. All right? They'll be commercial pig poop handlers. Whatever it calls for, obviously, what it's saying here is that the government will take whatever means that it needs to squash the little guy. Now, if they come into a farm where the one guy has a farm, and it's a family farm, and he's got one guy working, and he gets a $130,000 fine, do you think that that's going to help him in his quest for income inequality, or do you think that that's going to hold him back?
He'll probably lose the employee he has. He won't be able to pay.
So both he and the employee get hurt.
Yeah.
By the same government that supposedly has his interest and the little guy's interest at heart. That's one example.
Yep.
The EPA. Have you ever heard of Rosemont Copper? Rosemont Copper is a project, by the way, we have a couple of guesses we'll get to here in just a second. Rosemont Copper is a copper mining project in western Arizona where they're trying to mine copper. By the way, did you know that in your telephone that one-tenth of the weight of your telephone is copper? Copper is in all electronic devices. I mean, the pajama boy can't have all his little pajama stuff. Can't even have his eyeglasses without copper.
Best conductive metal ever.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, of course, if we don't mine it here, guess what? We get it from somebody else who will mine it. And most likely mine it in a much more careless fashion than we do here. Well, the United States of America has the slowest permitting process in the world. Not the free world, not the Western world, in the entire world for issuing permits to mine. And what's going on in Arizona is that this company for 7 years has been trying to get a permit. By the way, it takes 7 to 10 years in the United States, the worst in the
world. And you can't even start to mine until you get that permit complete?
Oh, you can't turn the first spoonful of dirt, much less do any mine. You can't build a building. Much you can't do anything. And well, guess lo and behold, the U.S. Forest Service this week gave them permission to begin operations. Unfortunately, now it's up to the EPA. And the EPA every day keeps wanting more and more information and therefore pushing off the decision further and further and further and further. And guess what that means? It means that in an area of Arizona, by the way, part of the problem the EPA has is the Clean Air and Water Act, and that they would be fouling the water on an 18-mile section of one river in Arizona. And this is an astounding fact that I did not know. Of course, I've never been to Arizona. But in Arizona, they have over 39,000 rivers and streams. 39,000. That's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And this one mine is going to affect a small portion of one of those rivers or streams. And it's in an area where the unemployment rate is 10%, excuse me, 39,039 rivers and streams. And so the people who are unemployed who would be given good jobs and therefore be able to mitigate the effects of income inequality because they would have good paying jobs do not have those jobs thanks to the liberals. These are just two examples that are going on right now in two small parts of the country, and you can bet your sweet patoot that this is going on all over the country because the federal government wants its finger in everybody's pie. All right, let's go back to the phone lines now. We have a couple of guys on here who think that they know who said, always forgive your enemies, nothing annoys them so much. Let's go first to Darren from Sanford. Thank you for calling, Darren. Who do you think said that?
Well, I'm not quite sure who said it, but the only pajama boy I know is Hugh Hefner.
Now, that's a good educated guess because of the clues that we've been giving out, but it was not Hugh Hefner.
That was a smoking jacket.
Yeah, this guy was wearing pajamas about 100 years before Hugh Hefner.
Can you ever be sure with Hugh Hefner?
Well, that's true. He's pretty 80 or something as he is right now. Darren, I'm sorry you're wrong on this one, but it was an excellent guess. We appreciate you calling. Thanks for being out there.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much. Let's go now to Susan. Susan from Orlando, who thinks she knows who said, always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much. Thank you for calling tonight, Susan.
Thank you. I think it might have been Walt Whitman.
She's on the right track.
The double W's.
You're on the right track. And I tell you what, have you gotten a bottle of Roxy Pacifics yet?
No, I sure haven't.
Well, if you'll stay on the line and give Jeff your information, you now will get a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics for at least participating in our contest tonight and coming close.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you for calling. We appreciate you being out there. When we come back, we have another guesser on the line. We'll take that guess and any more that call in the meantime. 407-774-8255 is that number. We'll be right back.
Your hometown station, 1520 WVZW, Apopka, Altamont Springs, a service of Salem Communications.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Blair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They team with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Blair Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
All right, and we are feeling good on this warm summer evening. Warm winter evening.
It's summer in the winter.
It felt like summer this afternoon.
80-something degrees and Christmas? Come on.
All right.
Wait till we go outside.
It's picking to be cold.
Uh-huh.
It's picking to be cold starting tomorrow afternoon.
Picking to be cold.
Picking to be real cold, buddy. All right, we're picking to get on to some more business here because we'd be the American adversaries on our three-hour tour. 407-774-8255 is the number. We're going to get to Sunny Patricia Summerlin, our California glow girl, here in a few minutes. But we do have a couple of more callers on the line as to our Who Said That contest. We're looking for the author of the quote, always forgive your enemies, nothing annoys them so much. And, Rick, I do not want you to go away. I'm going to take Sharon's call first. But, Rick, we're coming to you, so don't go away. No matter what Sharon says, Rick, don't go away. Sharon, thank you for calling tonight. Who said, always forgive your enemies, nothing annoys them so much?
Well, you know, Chris, I've been sitting here listening to the show and listening to all the guesses, and they were good guesses, but I was really surprised that no one else thought of that great British writer, Oscar Wilde.
Well, now just hold on a second, because somebody else did think of that. That would be Rick, who I have on the other line. Rick.
Oh, no.
Oh, well, we call him. We take him as we get him. But, Rick, thank you for calling, too. Rick, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
And you knew it was Oscar Wilde as well. What gave it away? Did you know it? Had you heard the quote before?
Yeah, well, actually, you know, I actually had a comment, so I will hold.
Okay, but that's go ahead. But how did you know it was Oscar Wilde?
Well, between the pajamas and the witticisms, I mean,
pajamas did it. Yeah,
we were the wittiest persons ever. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, well, don't go away. We'll go back to Sharon, and then we'll come back to you. So,
all right.
So Sharon, both you and Rick won. So we're going to declare both you and Rick the winners tonight.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, all right.
And you know, there's only one worse thing than being gossiped about.
What's that?
That is not being gossiped about.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you so much. Okay, Sharon.
Have a good evening.
All right, make sure Jess got your info in there. All right, okay, let's go back now to Rick. Rick, you said you wanted to make a comment. Thank you for calling.
Actually, you know, you're talking about the EPA and so on, and it's a good thing I'm not paranoid, because I mean, you know, I don't want to sound conspiratorial or anything like that, but it's almost like it's a conspiracy against the economy, you know, what these people do, you know. And in spite of them, we still thrive. Although, I mean, I have no idea how well we would do if they didn't exist. As far as economy wise, you know, with the fracking and the whatever and the so on and so, you know, there's just so many things that they just stop, and it's incredible that 7 to 10 years for you know, to start an operation.
It's absolutely ridiculous, and because they just keep throwing things in the way, and you're absolutely right. In a sense, it is a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy of ignorance, because obviously they don't want the copper mine to open, so they're making it as difficult as possible for the copper miners. So eventually, they're hoping the copper miners, the company, will just give up and go away. That's what they're trying to do. Without outlawing copper mining, they're trying to make it so the copper miners don't want to mine the copper.
That's what Obama said flat out he wanted to do with coal burning
plants. That's right. I was just going to say the coal mining.
They can stay in business if they want, but they're going to be taxed out of existence.
Just name any plug in any resource. Oil, natural gas, gold, you name it. Plug them all in. And they don't want it mined. They don't want lead smelted. Okay? Yeah, it's all. You're absolutely right. It's not a conspiracy where they sit in a room and talk about all this stuff, but it's a conspiracy born of their stupidity. And in that sense, I believe it's actually a little bit more dangerous. But you're absolutely right, Rick, because they get in the way. There's another article. This was in Thursday's Wall Street Journal by John B. Taylor. It's entitled, by the way, he's a professor of economics at Stanford, you know, where they have the highest IQ in the country. They may not have the highest income, but they got the highest IQ out there. But anyway, the economic hokum of secular stagnation. In other words, he's talking about how we have been told that one reason why this recovery hasn't been so good is because it was complicated by a financial crisis. In other words, we had to bail out the banks and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and all that stuff. Well, guess what? This professor of economics at Stanford has done a study, and he has discovered that in history, in American history, when you had a financial crisis combined with a recession, it led to a stronger, not weaker, recovery. Because in past times when this has occurred, you did not have all of this government intervention. In other words, the economy was able to correct on its own, and it did so at a clip of an average of 6% GDP growth per year.
Because the government didn't get in the way.
So you're absolutely right, Rick.
It's like they want to make everybody, you know, individuals dependent upon them. They're trying to make corporations.
They want an end to capitalism.
Well, you are absolutely right, and it goes back to what de Tocqueville said. He said, what they are creating and feeding here is a depraved taste for equality, which impels the weak to attempt to lower the powerful to their level and reduces men to prefer equality in slavery to inequality with freedom. So, yeah, they're just driving everybody down. And you're so right about that, Rick. And it is.
I really enjoy your show, guys. You know, just keep up the good work.
Okay. All right. And don't go away. Get your information to Jeff so we can get you a gift card to Cafe Positano. Hope to see you over there.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. We appreciate you calling. Appreciate you being out there. Those were excellent calls. We appreciate them all.
You know, it's kind of like in the wild when there's a little baby chick trying to get out of its egg. If you try to help that little baby chick by peeling away the albumen and the outside of the shell, yeah. You know what happens? The chick gets out, but the chick dies.
Yeah, it's
because it's not forced into forcing its way out.
The challenges develop strength and character, if you will. By the way, Rick mentioned corporations. Corporations are not going to be a solution to this. They're never going to really put up the fight that they need to put up. There's another article. We refer to another article in this weekend's Wall Street Journal. This was once again from Thursday. And it's an op-ed from the editorial board of the paper. It's called The Rope to Hang Them. And it talks about John Podesta. And by the way, a couple of weeks ago, I made a mistake on this show, and I've been meaning to correct it, so let me do it right now. When I announced that John Podesta has been hired by the Obama administration, I had confused him in my mind with Lanny Davis, because what I said was, perhaps this is a step by the Obama administration toward triangulation, which was Clinton basically more or less moving toward the middle. Lanny Davis was part of that. He and Dick Morris were part of that philosophy. Lanny Davis is a liberal, but he's a reasonable liberal, if you will. John Podesta is liberal, hard gut, hardcore liberal from the day one, from the get-go. And him coming to the White House is not going to be any move towards triangulation. It is a move further away from it, towards the confrontational style that both de Blasio and Obama have been using quite successfully in the political arena. Him coming to D.C. Has made his Center for American Progress, that he founded that in response to the Heritage Foundation. They revealed some of their donors, and you can just name major corporations, and they donate to this liberal group, and it's extortion money, if you will. But it also brings to mind something that Lenin said. Lenin said that big business will not fight them, that big business will sell government the rope to hang them. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, big business will sell government the rope to hang big business. Because they are simply think that that's all they can do to survive, that big government has all the power, they have none, and therefore they have to pay the tribute to the likes of John Podesta with the hopes that John Podesta will be good to them. And by the way, some of the biggest donors to John Podesta's Center for American Progress, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Caremark, CVS, Quest Diagnostics, CareFirst, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and Eli Lilly. Any of those names sound like anybody would have a big interest in what the government's been doing lately?
Oh, most definitely all of them.
Ah,
where's
yeah.
AARP? They've got to be on that list, too.
Well, they're not. They don't contribute to groups like this. They get their own contributions. Here's some more groups that contribute to John Podesta, the liberals. Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, Visa, and Blackstone. Blackstone is a private equity group. The biggest,
I thought that was the magician.
And by the way, Blackstone, I believe you can buy stocks in Blackstone. But it's nonetheless, it's an investment group. Biggest banks and financial companies. Here's another one. General Electric. Here's some more. Daimler and Toyota and BMW. Now, why would Daimler, Toyota, and BMW be interested in American politics? Because mileage standards that we set on all automobiles sold in the United States, guess what? Benefit them. So, the corporations will never be the answer. The only answer is going to be, guess what? Guys like us. Guys like the Tea Party. People, individuals who will stand up and say and do something about this outrage. Because even though corporations are negatively affected by it, they feel like, hey, we'll just charge the public. We'll just charge more. Yeah, right? If we can't mine copper in the United States, we'll go mine it somewhere else and charge the Americans more when we deliver it.
It's just economic sense. They'll pass that on to their consumers.
That's right. And all these liberals, you know, who hate all these things, they love all their little gadgets. You know, with the exception of Ted, what was his name, Kaczynski, the Unabomber.
Unabomber.
He was the only one true to their philosophy. He lived in a little shack out in the woods, mm-hmm. like a hermit. Well, you have to say, well, by God, he was at least true to the liberal movement.
He walked the talk.
He walked the talk. Unfortunately, none of the rest of them do. All right, unfortunately, we're out of time in this segment. When we come back, we're going to get see if we can't get Sunny, our Patricia, our California glow girl. Oh, I see she is on line one, so we'll take Woo-hoo! The break. When we come back, we'll have Sunny with us, so don't go away.
This former wrestling champion, B. Brian Blair, one of the killer bees. If you don't want to get stung by liberal lies, listen for the truth on the American Adversaries, the tag team champions of political professional wrestling on Orlando's AM 660 WORL.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the American Adversaries. And now, let's take a little trip to the left coast with a woman who really stimulates our brains. Yes, our brains. Meanwhile, it's Patricia Summerlin, Sunny, our California glow girl.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
I'm down in beautiful, sunny Florida.
Mm-hmm. It's good. It's going to get a little bit chilly here over the next couple of days. But,
I wish we could say that out here. We're just having the beautiful, sunny California weather. Yes. I want to grab my surfboard and go for it and hop on the waves. But, you know.
We want to watch you do that.
They'll watch you. I'll surf with you.
Yeah.
You'll protect me from the sharks, you know.
Yeah.
I may push you in the way.
I was going to say he'll have to protect you from us sharks on the land.
Sonny, did you see that photobomb picture last mm-hmm. week?
Oh, yeah. Isn't that something?
Oh, very scary.
That's crazy. I love those photobombs. Yeah, if it happens to me all the time. Speaking of which, was the New Year's good, guys? I had, plenty of On the Rocks and that Roxy's Pacific. Thank you. I did receive it. It's amazing stuff.
Excellent.
Really, really good.
Glad you like it. Glad you like it. Yeah, we had a great New Year's Eve, too. We celebrated over here with our sponsor, Cafe Positano, and he put on a fireworks show, and I had some lemon jello, and, oh, it was a great evening, yeah.
Lemon jello. What was in that lemon jello?
Oh, it's the good stuff.
Let's just say they keep it in the freezer, but it won't freeze.
That's the way to do it.
Antifreeze.
All right. Hey,
let's talk a little bit about Obamacare. How is that going out there in California, and are people actually able to get health care?
Oh, gosh. I think they're trying. I think it's more, on the flip side, Obama's been bashed by Mitt Romney. He's bashed him all but good, and he's saying that it's been deceptive, and the promises, of course, have not been kept up. And, the people that had insurance previous, they're not able to keep their own insurance. So, you know, right there was a lie. There's 4.7 million have had their own insurance canceled, guys,
you know,
since the rollout. That's unheard of. That's so sad.
It is. It's I call it cruel. And you're referring to an interview that Mitt Romney gave this morning on Fox where, yeah, he did say this was deceptive. It's not like in Massachusetts where the government did not dictate to people what kind of health care coverage that they had to have. I've also heard that in California that many of the best hospitals will not be accepting Obamacare or the California version of it. Is that true?
That is very true. So not only are they not going to have their own, you know, existing that they had previous, and if they sign up and they don't even have this insurance, actually they don't have any insurance. You know, most of them, you know, and they're paying for actually care that they don't need.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the other downfall. I mean, so it's a botch job. It's not where I think everybody, the American people, were looking forward to.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. and it's very definitely negatively affected a lot of people. You know, Kathleen Sebelius seems to think that it's so far being becoming more of a success as more people are gaining access to health care. But what she seems to ignore is how many people are losing their access to the health care that they've been used to.
It's akin to when the job numbers come out and Obama talks about all the jobs we've gained without talking about the jobs they've lost.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Well, it's hurting the economy overall and the families, and that's it. And then just think, like I said before, with people that have serious illnesses, cancer and leukemia, you know, what about those people? I mean, that's just left them, like I said, with a death sentence, and that's sad.
Yeah.
So sad, yeah.
It certainly is, and there's a lot of people out there who are tonight in very, very dire straits because they just do not know what's going to happen next. And it did not have to be this way. It did not. That's the bottom line that I do not hear enough people saying, and that is that it did not have to be done this way. It did not have to be so disruptive. You still could have had some sort of Obamacare without having to disrupt the entire system in order to try to pull it off.
Exactly. And I think Obama realizes that, but he doesn't know how to make his way out of it, you know?
Yeah.
He's getting it now, you know?
Yeah.
But, hey, it's a little too late.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Speaking of death sentences, there's been a story from California that has been crisscrossing across the country and getting more and more attention, and it's about this little girl, Jahi McMath, and I think I'm pronouncing her name correctly, a girl who was evidently, what was she, about 10 or 12 years old, Sonny?
She's actually 13 years old.
13 years old. She was recommended for some sinus and eye, ears, and nose and throat type stuff, having to
well,
do with.
I believe it was tonsillitis.
It was a tonsillectomy.
Right.
It was more so than that though, because it had to do with sleep apnea, and they were doing surgery on, I believe, her sinuses, her tonsils. It was more than just having her tonsils removed.
Maybe adenoids.
And there was bleeding in the surgery, and evidently they lost her on the table. I guess, Sonny, is that correct?
Well, yeah, there was excessive bleeding and that's what I understand, and it caused no brain movement after the surgery. She had a cardiac arrest,
which
caused the brain death.
Right.
Yeah.
And evidently the doctors have determined there's no brain activity, and even though, believe it or not, there is no, in situations like this, clear definition of death, the medical community accepts no brain activity as being quote-unquote dead, even if your heart is still beating. Now, evidently, the girl's heart is beating unassisted, but she does have to have a respirator. Is that right, Sonny?
Yes, yes. She has to be hooked up to everything, I guess, to keep her in motion as far as her heart. Again, her brainstem, as of December 12th, is even no activity.
Right.
So to the doctors and physicians, they're looking at it like, no, she's gone. She is, you know, she's passed. And the parents, you know, I as a mother can understand that. You don't want to, you know, give up on your child in any case. And if there's any hope, and the mother is hoping and praying, and of course the father is, but the mother is what makes this movement happen for the child to move from another hospital and to get her some more care, because she thinks that she's improving since the time of no brain activity.
Did another hospital accept the child?
Yes, they plan on moving the child, but the hospital is in you know, we don't know the name, we don't know anything else about the hospital as of yet.
Oh, wow.
I heard it was a nursing center.
They're just saying a hospital, from what I see. It's a facility, and, you know, of course, they went head-to-head. Two sides had to agree, you know, from the hospital she was in. And, you know, it's a lot of things that she has to be hooked up to. They say they don't want to do it. An independent physician, Dr. Grillo, said that he refuses, and he tells the other physicians not to put her on the, what is this? Respiratory, you know, the whole thing that...
Life support.
I want to say trichotomy, but that's not the right word.
Trichotomy.
But he needs all this to be, you know, transported, and they're saying no, that she is dead, and let her be, you know. And it's, what a story. I mean, that's so heartbreaking. I just can't even imagine that. I had my tonsils out at 5, and of course I was fine, and I was lucky because I got teddy bears and ice cream, and everything is great.
Sonny, we've got a hard break. I want to talk about this a couple more minutes with you. So if you won't go away, we've got to take the break, but we'll come back with you here in about 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay, sounds good, guys.
Okay, folks, don't go away. We'll continue this conversation with Sonny, our California glow girl. Plus, we have WTF News with Johnny Guns coming up next, too. And don't forget, we got Lair's closing, so we got a lot to do. We'll be right.
The battle is heating up. You're listening to the American Adversaries on 660 WORL and on 1520 The Biz, if you can take it.
We hope you're having a fantastic Sunday evening. It's our last half hour of the American Adversaries. Lair Adams, Christopher Hart, Johnny Guns, Nostradamus. We have Jeff behind the glass, and on the line right now we have the beautiful Sonny, Patricia Summerlin, and she's our California glow girl. And Sonny, I have to ask you, with all this nonsense with Obamacare going on in California, how does the general population out there seem to feel about it? Are they still all pro, yes, yes, Obamacare, or are they starting to feel the bite?
I would have to say they felt the bite a while ago. Yeah, they're just now, they're trying. You know, the ones that have signed up, those are the ones that are probably pushing for them and still rooting because they want it to happen. Because
right.
It's their health.
Right.
It's each individual that needs that health care. We all do. No matter what, you know, income you have, you need health care. And these poor people that really depended on it, you know, they have no choice. What are they going? They're going to sit there and go, okay. No, they're hoping. They're like, come on, Obama. You know, you're a savior. I'm sure that's what they're doing. Now, the other side, you know, the ones that aren't so desperate, if you will, to need that medical care, they're probably pretty PO'd.
Yeah.
Because now they've lost their good insurance, and they're
right.
stuck. So it's, wait a minute. What the heck just happened?
You're absolutely
you know?
Right. You're absolutely right.
No.
I'm glad you brought that up because what he has done now is he has managed to pit whole nother segments of society one against the other. And
uh-huh.
and it's once again an example of the guy who was supposed to be the uniter being the divider. One last
Very well said. That's true. And before we go any further, I do want to wish Notre Dame
yes.
happy anniversary.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Oh.
Thank you, Sonny. That is nice of you.
How does she know and we don't know?
She listens to us.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it is. Congratulations, Nostradamus, to both you and your lovely
thank you,
wife.
Thank you, thank you,
yes, that's amazing and wonderful, and God bless.
29 years.
Many more years.
And we just
oh,
figured out
God,
next year...
Amazing.
Next year, our anniversary is going to be on 1/5/15, and it'll be our 30th anniversary. 15
wow.
and 15
wow.
is 30. Ooh,
dun, dun,
freaky!
Dun.
Well, that's gonna be a you know I don't know how many carrots added on and an extra special you know Fiji Island trip or something. You know, my listening should really love me now. They're like,
I was gonna say, yeah, some good gift ideas going on here.
If this room's rocking, don't come a knocking.
There you go. Hey.
All right. So
whatever it takes for a wonderful marriage.
All right. Anything yeah. else before we let you go tonight?
Real quick, when we're back on the little girl.
Oh, yes.
Know,
yeah.
And hearts and prayers, and, you know, I'm pulling for her, too, as a parent, like I said, and her parents, what they're going through. The mother in this situation has taken on all of anything. If, when they transport her, they don't want to be responsible, in other words, to this, you know,
right.
facility.
Sure.
So if her heart stops beating, there's agreement that was reached Friday that the mom has to deal with all that during the transfer
yeah.
because they don't actually want to insert feeding or
tracheotomy.
Mm-hmm. It's not what they have listed here, but something like
okay.
that. Yeah,
all
maybe
right.
in it tubes for the move.
Right,
There's
right.
There's a couple words that I listed, but yeah, that's tracheotomy is one of them.
Yeah.
And then the feeding and...
let me ask you this. Is she getting a lot of public support?
Sure. I think people are protesting and they're trying to raise money for the family.
Yeah.
To do all this, it's quite expensive, you
yeah.
know?
You know, we had a similar...
They're raising money, pretty good amount.
Yeah, we had a more or less similar situation here in Florida a number of years back with Terry Schiavo,
mm-hmm.
Who was, it's a different circumstance because in her case, the doctors never declared her dead.
Yeah.
In this case, the doctors evidently have. Now, obviously, these are the same doctors who botched the surgery on the little girl. I shouldn't say botched because I don't know, but
who went wrong.
This was the same hospital where everything went bad. So on the one hand, I can understand the mother at least wanting her to get the daughter out of that situation where the people who caused this are the ones who are now saying, hey, let's go pull the plug. And I always look at this situation, whether it be Shivo or this little girl or whatever, like this. We're only going to be in this world for a short period of time. We're going to be dead forever. So what's the hurry of putting somebody who's in this world on into the next one?
Well, if they're obviously suffering, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm. But in this case, that's not obvious.
No, it's not.
No, and if she can still bring some joy to those parents, I don't know. It's a real tough decision, but I'm like you, Sonny.
Yeah.
You know, you have to look at this as a parent, and you have to have sympathy for them as a parent and understand that society can't just be, oh, well, we've declared her dead, and that'd be the end of it.
And that's the doctors, like you said, are saying that. Imagine the same ones that, you know.
Right.
Not
right.
to say they, you know, are, who right. knows. And, you know, that's another thing for another talk day, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
who
but
knows?
Different states.
It's a bad situation.
Right. Different states deal with this differently. And as a matter of fact, in New York, it's up to the parents. And different religions look at this differently as well, because it's not that clearly defined in a case like this, whether she is, quote unquote, alive or dead.
Right. And the mother said, you know, she doesn't want to give up hope. And
I don't blame her.
As parents, we don't want to.
I don't blame her. I don't blame her because it's a permanent decision.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, Sonny. Thank you so very much. Great job tonight. We really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. And we'll see each other again or actually talk
okay.
on Sunday.
Where can people visit you?
Oh, they can visit me everywhere here in Sunny Cal, but on my Facebook page, Twitter, you know, Stage 32, you can find me everywhere there, and then hopefully soon on tour.
All right.
I'll be out there.
Be a lot of fun. All right.
Yeah,
hope you come this way.
All right.
All right. You have
Take
a great
care,
week.
Guys.
Talk to you next Sunday.
You,
all right.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Okay. All right. That's Sunny, our California glow girl. That's gorgeous lady of wrestling. All right. Now, talking about gorgeous people, let's go now to Johnny Guns with some WTF news. Quit looking around. I'm talking about you.
You got me excited there when you were talking about gorgeous people. All right. Let's start talking about Mr. David Waddell. Who's he? Well, he's a Constitution Party councilman who preaches against big government and high taxes. So, well, he decided to take matters into his own hand and decided to make government in Indian Trails, North Carolina, a little smaller by removing himself from it. But he didn't do it with just any old resignation letter. Nope, he wrote his I quit letter in Klingon. Yeah, now I can't pronounce Klingon, so I'm not even going to try.
By the hand of Karen! A
lot of K's and V's.
Yeah, I don't know what I just said. You may have to bleep that out, Jeff. Here's the translation.
Our apologies to all the Klingons listening out there right now, folks.
Send your complaint letters to...
You'll never go to Stobelcore talking like that.
Here's the translation. Teach the city the Constitution. I will return next time to witness victory. Resignation occurs in 2014, the 31st of January. Perhaps today is a good date to resign. Death to the Romulans. No, I added that. He says he wrote it in Klingon because they value integrity, honor, and duty, which are three qualities not commonly found in government.
How about reality? Okay, no, that doesn't.
Not fun at all. Waddell's not going away, though. He's planning to campaign on the Constitution Party's platform for U.S. Democratic Senator Kay Hagan's seat. His campaign slogan is, Congress, beam me up.
That is a complaint.
He will win by the hand of chaos.
Oh, my goodness.
Hit me with a shocking stick,
yeah.
Right?
Let's move on to a man who was allegedly high on meth. He reportedly fought off more than a dozen police officers while publicly, let's just say, he was showing his bong. Andrew Fry, 37 years old, made a series of outbursts and then began, we'll say, smoking in an Oregon restaurant, according to local newspapers. Police were reportedly unable to subdue Frey with a taser. I really have to clean this up.
He was creating his own static electricity.
Yeah. Let's just say it took 15 officers to finally take him into custody and stop him from doing what he was doing. Now, see, ladies?
All they had to do was tell him he'd go blind.
Wow, if you couldn't figure out
hair on his hands.
You couldn't figure out what I was dancing around. You obviously know it now. I was just going to say, ladies, that this proves that we men can do two things at once. Frey later reportedly told authorities that he took meth and couldn't remember the incident. He was treated at a local hospital and then booked into the county jail on charges of public indecency, theft of services, I wonder what those could be, and resisting arrest. Wow, I should have saved that one for last, given Chris's reaction.
It's
going
to be hard to top that one, all right.
No, I can guarantee.
Let's just put it there. It's going to be hard to beat that one.
It's unbeatable.
Well, the problem was these guys did not want to get into hand-to-hand combat.
Oh, let me tell you something. Off the air, I'll tell you what I was going to say for that. All right.
Maybe we better move on.
Let's end with Floridian and aspiring model Lisa DeLappi, who was arrested after she allegedly tried to run over her boyfriend with a car on their special day of love. Palm Beach deputies say Lappi, who lives in Royal Palm Beach, told them her 27-year-old boyfriend set her off. So she responded, of course, by attempting to mow him down with her red Pontiac.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. She missed
what
him.
What else would you do?
Yeah. She missed him, but she did hit his bike and crashed into his parked car. Investigators said that Lappi informed them that it was their couple's anniversary, and they've been dating for a year and a half, which... Who celebrates half anniversaries?
18-month anniversary?
Yeah. Anyway, according to the Sun Sentinel...
That's not the way y'all are going to celebrate your anniversary.
No, ours are 29, and we're feeling fine.
I was going to say, wait a minute, you don't have a Pontiac, do you?
No, it's going to be 29 and a half. This is what you need.
All right,
according to the Sun Sentinel, the boyfriend, who we will call Captain Obvious, confirmed to authorities that his girlfriend was upset. Yeah. According to this story, you know, people wonder why I don't date models. So to all those Victoria's Secret angels that keep texting and emailing me, I'm sorry. You're just not my type.
But why didn't this girl, Lisa Lappi, just give him a Lappi dance?
I knew you were getting there.
And Larry's closing comments will be coming up here.
We just have a few seconds left, but we have time for this. Speaking of craziness, Rob Ford, the Toronto mayor, has filed for re-election.
Wow. I read that. Yeah.
And in the process, he declared himself, and get this, the best leader that Canada's largest city has ever had.
And you know, polls say he will win.
Well,
he will win.
He's cracked up. He's high.
He's got plenty to eat at home.
Not talking about fast food. Right?
Let's see. Is it? We're coming back with Larry's Closing Comments.
He doesn't have to beat around the bush, does he? All right, folks, we're on the American Adversaries. When we come back, we'll have Larry's Closing Comments and then a few words about some changes going on around here. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is Patricia Sumlin. When I'm in Central Florida, I like to snuggle with three sexy humps. Christopher Hart, Nostradamus, and Lair Adams. Ooh, the American Adversaries on News Talk 660 WORL. These guys stimulate my brain. Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Sonny. Jenny's just losing it here. Oh, my. It's the end of, well, just getting close to the end of our three-hour tour. We've only got just a couple of minutes left, but it is time for one of my favorite segments, and my favorite segment and the 12th segment of every week's show. That would be Lair's Closing Comments.
Oh, well, thank you. You don't have to act so bored about it. Good friends. Yeah, those yawns were apropos. How did you sleep last night? Great, I hope.
with perchance a calming dream or two. Sleep, we know from science and common sense, is incredibly important for our bodies and mental states. Studies have shown chronic lack of sleep can cause severe mental breakdown and heart damage. Fortunately, the average person is able to get the necessary amount of REM state rest, depending on conditions and stress. One of the most disappointing little things in life is to get up in the morning without at least 5 or 6 hours of sleep. We all hate those nights when all of a sudden at 1, 2, 3, 4 in the morning, we run out of sleep. I'm not talking about the wacky dream or nightmare waking you, or that little voice that asks, "Is that the bathroom calling my name?" No, it's those incredibly irritating evenings when you're not jolted awake, but slowly realize through a thick fog, "Hey, what just happened? It's X in the morning. So brain, turn off and wake me when the alarm goes off." But it doesn't work that way. Not tonight. You see, in this twilight of half asleep, half awake, information about the real and responsible world begins to flood into a brain whose logic and reasoning haven't turned on yet. The problems you were trying to avoid by going to sleep in the first place return with abandon. Even issues that are relatively easy to overcome can create a nightmarish panic, when at the same time, all we want to do is turn it off, your troubled thinker, that is, and go back to sleep. Well, let me tell you from experience, that ain't gonna happen. Unless you drug or drink yourself back into a stupor, you will lay there wide awake till morning, or worse off, doze off 5 minutes before the alarm screams like the mother of a teenager yelling for the fifth time to get up. The answer all the brainy types agree is to get up and wake up. This allows the logical understanding part of your noggin to catch up. Whether you turn the light on and read or the boob tube to reanesthetize yourself, you've emerged from the twilight zone, thanks Rod, into the world of sober. Now that you're awake, you have a real chance to fall asleep again. And this time, the self-imposed demons who hate the logical side will most likely sleep themselves. To all of you, I wish a good night's sleep. And never forget, every morning is glorious. Have a super-dee-duper week, folks.
All right. Excellent job there, Lair Adams. And, yeah, I tell you what, I couldn't do without my 8 hours.
But those nights when you wake up and just nothing. It's like you can toss and turn. You are not.
I have two words to say. Sleep number. Okay. All right. Folks, you've heard me talking over the past few weeks about some changes coming here to the station.
Can we finally get the answer out of you?
Well, part of it. Speaking of the answer, the station will no longer be using the tagline News Talk 660 WORL. It is now going to be AM 660 The Answer. And this is just the beginning of some changes that are going to be happening around here for the better, which will enhance your listening experience. But as of tomorrow, we will be AM 660 The Answer, and will be intelligent, conservative AM 660 The Answer. And I think that you'll find in some of the promos that the station runs be a bit more edgy, if you will. And I think that this is going to be a great new direction that the station is going in. They're recommitting to conservative talk here in Orlando, and of course that is always a good thing. And there are going to be some real exciting things coming that you folks will be able to participate in that will, let's just say, make the changes a little bit fun. And I can't really get into those details yet, but there's going to be a lot of fun and excitement as the spring nears and we get into the spring. But as of tomorrow, we will be AM 660 The Answer. The lineup will change slightly. It will not change for us. It will not change on the weekends at all. The lineup will change, however, slightly during the week. You will still have Bill Bennett from 6 to 9 a.m. every day. You will now have Mike Gallagher from 9 a.m. to noon. He used to be 9 to 11. He will now be 9 a.m. to noon.
And that's all live, right?
All be live, at which time we will pick up Dennis Miller. And Dennis Miller will be noon to 3. He was 11 to 1. Dennis Miller will be noon to 3. Then it will be Michael Medved, 3 to 5, then us, then Gary Kaltbaum. Then it will be Dennis Prager. He is being moved from 1 o'clock in the afternoon to 7 o'clock. He will be 7 to 9, and then Hugh Hewitt will take you till midnight. Those will be the changes in the lineup that will begin tomorrow. The name change will begin tomorrow. There are other changes coming, as I said, which will be partly a lot of fun for you, partly will improve your listening experience here. I can't go into any more details about that now, but let's just say good things is a-coming around here. But we folks, we hope for that the next year you will be with us and you will enjoy everything that you hear on the station here. You'll still have all the powerful lineup you have now, just a little reshuffling, if you will, during the week. But we will still be here Sundays 5 to 8. We will still be during your drive time hour. Carl Jackson will still be here on Saturday. Marshall Polston will still be here. John Butler Book, all the other great programming that you hear on the weekends will still be in the same time slots on the weekends. No changes there.
Well, this is definitely a change for the better. I'm glad to see that Dennis Miller now has a three-hour program. I mean, he does a great show. And Gallagher. Gallagher gets his full 3 hours, too. So it's going to be great. We have a tremendous amount of talent.
If anything, you're getting more conservative talk, okay, because you're getting the extra hour of Prager, excuse me, the extra hour of Gallagher mm-hmm. and Miller.
And Miller.
And they just moved Prager to make, you know, room for that. So you're actually getting more control. 2 hours more of conservative talk 5 days a week, plus all the other stuff that you still got. Plus, there's more coming. This is just the beginning of some great new improvements around here.
You're still teasing us, Chris.
I know it.
I'm not going to let it all out.
All right,
and again, folks, where else are you going to find local politics, a local take on politics on the AM dial?
That's right.
Pretty much us.
That's right. And news talk radio, that is to say talk radio, political talk radio, is the most listen to radio in all radio land, and that includes all the other formats. I was astonished when I heard that.
Yeah, country's always big, and all contemporaries usually very big.
Yeah.
But yeah, news talk, and that's not just politics, because we're not in a political year.
Yeah.
But we weren't last year.
That's right. And of course, we do have the political year coming up too, so that's going to add to the excitement. But a lot of good things happening around here. I'm glad that you folks are with us, and I hope you'll stay with us. Now, tomorrow's show, we're going to have a member of the group that's sponsoring the Baca Rally. You know, that's the Bikers Against Child Abuse. That rally is coming up next Sunday. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. Tuesday, we have Abe, right, Dennis?
We definitely do. Abe Katzman, our man in Jerusalem.
And Congress and the President are back in D.C. Oh, heaven help us.
Sure.
So we're going to have a lot of talk about over the next few weeks.
Like Chris said, things, they are a-changing, but the American Adversaries will be back with the best in local political politics. We are the American Adversaries, folks. Have a fantastic evening, and we'll see you when, everybody?
Tomorrow night.
And we will be
live
at 5.
See you.
Night, everybody.
Your hometown station, 1520 WVCW, Apopka, Altamont Springs, a service of Salem Communications, part of